Welcome to the Players Podcast, and on today's episode, we're going to welcome Coach Marshall Cho, formerly of Lake Oswego High School. But before we get into the interview, I wanted to let you know of something that's coming up on the show. We're going to be leading a little book study on Kobe Bryant's Mamba Mentality book. I'll be highlighting certain selections from the book and offer some reflections on how those tips can help you as a player, help us as coaches, and I invite you to join along. Whether you've read the book or not, I'd love to grow with you as a player, coach, as a student of the game. Also, make sure you check out the book, Learning the Game of Basketball, available on SalemHoopsProject.org for free or on Amazon. All funds from the book help support the Salem Hoops Project. We are a nonprofit organization in Salem, Oregon, who provide free basketball clinics for youth around our area. So, Coach, in your time at Lake Oswego, you think about some of the players who maybe they had the most impact, or maybe they just fulfilled their potential the most. You know, maybe they weren't the all-league players, but maybe they were. What are some things you saw from them that enabled to do so, whether that's the work they put in or just the intangibles they developed?
Yeah, Matt, first of all, just great to be with you. Happy 2024. Just offline, even before you press record on this, you know, I was sharing with you how it's the year of the dragon. I turned 48 this May of 2024. So I've been in this, you know, deep reflective mode just to begin with in this new year. But now you're just, you know, hit me right with, you know, making me reflect on the 8 years at Lake Oswego. When I think about that in terms of your specific question, I think more than anything, what is the biggest connection, a point of connection or synergy between the head coach and their players, right? So what you're talking about is, you know, what that might be very unique to us and my personality and who I was and what I brought to the table as a head coach at Lake Oswego. And that might be different from, you know, all the other coaches across the state. But when I think about the players who were able to have the most impact, I think about those who embodied the values that and the core values that I try to set in the program, right? So I believe any organization, you need to have a clear vision for where you're taking the team and the roadmap to that. And for us, whether that was, you know, in your face with putting our three core values of courage, presence, and trust, and trying to live that out every day versus, you know, something that might be more, you know, subtle, like, okay, those are big words, but what are the actions, you know, what are the bullet points that you can hit behind each of those words, and how did I as a leader model it, right? Explicitly, implicitly, and how present were our players to pay attention to that and follow along? I used to say a lot, like, you can't get to trust, for example, without courage and presence. You know, for us, it was all about, do you have the courage to show up? And then once you show up, do you have the presence? Whether it's for you, taking your cool jackets off and getting over yourself and buying into something that's bigger than you, or whether it's, you know, if you have the presence of mind to speak up, to listen, to follow directions, all of those things. I think if you have a good marriage between the head coach and the player that's willing to follow along, I think those are the players who had the most impact.
Kind of countering that question, did you see any players come through where you just look back and say, if they only would have bought in, they could have had so much more success than what they had?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I think, you know, what the beauty of at least how we did it at Lake Oswego is, you know, we really tried to make it a program that was from running from fourth grade all the way up through 12th grade, right? So I think that's where, you know, at the end of the 8 years, even now, you know, it's been about almost approaching a year, right? It's been about 8 months since I stepped away from, you know, being a caretaker of that program, but I still see kids who are, you know, freshmen and sophomores who never played for me that I have a connection and a relationship with. And I think when I look back on that length of time and the opportunity to have that kind of an impactful relationship, you also get to see, like, you know, it's by the time the players are juniors and seniors and they made it through, you know, they're the ones that I get to see on an even more regular basis, right? But what I think is, you know, a lot of times and this will be just even down the line in this interview, I think like a seventh and eighth grade year is extremely pivotal, right? In terms of the level of commitment that a kid is going to have towards basketball, as much as we like to say, hey, don't specialize, be a multi-sport athlete, there's also certain things that I think you need to get exposed to as you're approaching your high school years, where, the environment has changed, where you do gotta at some point decide that you're going to commit to this game of basketball. So when I think on those things, and it's not a good or a bad thing, I think the challenge in an affluent suburb like Lake Oswego, where kids have many other options to go to, I would say there's a lot of kids who chose, the football baseball route, or who chose the lacrosse route and chose other sports, where I think, and again, this is no knock. Some of these players are exceptional. Like, we had a team a couple years ago where our state Gatorade Player of the Year, Jack Lane, was the starting quarterback. And, he played basketball for us through his sophomore year. But junior, senior year, he's focusing on football, right? And, or even like Casey Philkins, 2 years before that, he's currently at Stanford University as a running back, also a Gatorade State Player of the Year. I think on more of those guys that I missed out on, where, I think if I had given them more exposure to elite basketball scenes, then by the time they're, as they're focusing on their other sport, there's still enough of a draw with the game of basketball that they would have, stayed on and contributed to us. And, we certainly missed them a lot, by the time they were seniors and weren't playing for us.
Well, that's a pretty special place where if you can lose an athlete like that and still feel the competitive team like you did in those years. I know coming from McKay High School, if one of our best football players wasn't playing basketball for us, we were going to feel that. So that's a pretty special place to be when you can have that opportunity to still feel the competitive team like you did. And now you've transitioned to the youth basketball scene. How old is your son now?
He's a young eighth grader. He's 13.
Okay.
So he's, when my wife and I were enrolling our kid into kindergarten, a lot of people, advised us, for boys, hold him back. But, he was academically, showing signs of being advanced. And I think in terms of being in the classroom, he would have been bored if had we held him back a year. But it's been an interesting experience just going through that with him as well, especially in the youth basketball scene where there's a lot of holdbacks. And the idea is to, it's like that Malcolm Gladwell book, right? The tipping point where, if you're in Canada, like if you were born in January, then you had an advantage, right? Because you got to be 10 months, 12 months, older than the competition, a kid who, or 6 months even, and I think those things make a difference. But at the same time, I love the fact that he's had to be an underdog, that he's had to have some adversity, he's had to be undersized, he's had to figure things out. Basketball oftentimes is a puzzle that's to be solved. And for him to have, at this point, persevere through the physical deficits that he may have against his peers, I think it only positions him well for the long term. So been a joy stepping away. I've been very busy coaching my son's eighth grade youth feeder program here on the other side of the lake at Lake Ridge, ironically. But also, like, I've had an opportunity to kind of dip my toe into the AAU scene, this fall, starting a an AAU team for his eighth grade group, and that was eye-opening. And just, it got me to thinking about what kind of things that I could be doing in the coming year to impact youth basketball in a positive way.
Now, as a high school coach, you have perceptions or expectations of what you want your youth teams doing during the season, during the off season. Now that you're in that spot as a youth coach, do you feel you're coaching it the same way you would have wanted your coaches to? Or do you, now that you're in the experience, do you find, you know what, this actually might be a better option?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge, there's two things that I've had to really adjust. And I think even in my last few years of being a high school coach, coming out of COVID, and I can tell in many ways, I think our game is as good as it's ever been. And also, in other ways, I think we're really at a crossroads. I think more than ever, as coaches, it's just one additional hat that we have to wear now with all the mental health challenges that are coming to the surface. I think we've always had those, but now it's more on our forefront to have those conversations. It's more on our forefront when a kid needs a mental day, that, you should be listening. You should be giving that, time for the kids who need it. At the same time, what I find is, have we also kind of not realized how resilient our kids are? So if a kid is, unable to make practice, now, so you're aware of the situation, can you have a conversation with the kid and say, "Hey, I know this is hard. I know all around, like, you're being told that, maybe you need to be home." What would it look like if there's a level of perseverance that you exercise to come and show up to practice, right? What would it look like? How can we do it so that you can at least make it for part of the practice or part of the games? And so I think that's what's been on my mind a lot. Like, how do we push and not let kids just, find a way to just not tackle some of these challenges that they may have, right? I said this often, and I think this is where, again, it's a challenge. I think it goes to putting that word presence back on the coaches to be truly present, to maybe, on this podcast, I'm doing a lot of talking, but, in practice, doing a lot less talking and a lot more listening to see what kind of clues that, these teenage boys are giving you. And then to meet them and say, "Hey, I know this is hard, but I think you're more resilient than you give yourself credit for." So I would say this often during times of COVID, that we found out that our kids are more fragile than ever, but also more resilient than ever. I think that range has just widened. And so, how do you find a sweet spot in terms of that challenge? Finding that balance of pushing them, knowing when to push them, and knowing when to pull back.
Do you think your location might have some sort of effect on that too? Just being in Lake Oswego versus somewhere like Gresham or maybe somewhere like Northeast
Yeah,
Salem?
for those listeners, it's ironic when I look back. I myself, grew up closer to like a Gresham or a McKay kind of situation. I grew up in Springfield High School, where the socioeconomic status is, closer to those, school in the lower end of the, economic, disparities. And then I went from that straight to, after I graduated from University of Oregon, teaching in inner city New York, in the South Bronx, in Harlem, and then all the way to Africa, even the third world country, where, if you think things were bad in inner city New York, like, you don't know what poverty is until you live in Africa and have seen it firsthand. So to have had that global experience and then to come back and raise my own children in Lake Oswego, I think there's a couple things. I think kids are kids wherever they go. The You talk about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Once there's a roof over your head, right? I think a lot of the kids are similar. You may be talking about certain extreme cases where kids don't have a roof over their head. And at that point, those kids who have gone through that kind of survival mode and come out on the other end, they're just going to be, in a way, more resilient and tougher if they've managed to survive it. But ultimately, I think, you got kids in Gresham or in Salem or Springfield, we all have a roof over our heads. I think that's the kind of perspective I have now after having lived in the country, in a third world country, where I've seen players without a roof over their head and they're still showing up to school, right? And so it lets you know that, the human spirit is strong. We've all kind of come out of COVID, and we, globally, we've survived it. And so I have that perspective when I think about, like, a kid who's saying, "Hey, like, I can't make it to practice, or I can't make it to." It's more, the practice is one thing, but it's all the extracurriculars, right? It's the breakfast club, the morning workouts, where, we talk about the unseen hours. That's not a part of the regular practice schedule. Are you doing all the extra work to give yourself a leg up on the competition? And, just circle back all the way to your very first question. The ones who were the most impactful were the ones who showed up to everything. Like, they just didn't miss workouts. They didn't miss practices. And it, you know, to be honest with you, that was a huge adjustment the last few years where I took that for granted, you know. I also think, you know, speaking to some of my coaches who coach in those communities that are more challenged economically, I tend to find that attendance is even harder there, right? And there are certain communities where, like, you know, like you got an older sibling who's having to watch younger siblings. You know, maybe they're not able to make it. There's a lot of challenges off the court that, in fact, you know, that my counterparts in other parts of our, you know, state, that I never had to deal with the Lake Oswego, right, for the most part.
You know, something that's interesting, you talk about the extra work, the extra workouts, and I think one of the dangers right now is, you know, when we were younger and we were similar generations, you and I, maybe not exactly the same, we were close. When
Yeah.
we were younger, that was just a kind of a rare thing. Like the odd one was putting in extra work. Everybody else was playing in season, maybe a little bit of summer league, but for the most part, it wasn't expected that you were going to be in the gym in the summer putting up shots. That was only for like the most dedicated. And people kind of like ridiculed them, like, what are you doing? Like, get a life. Whereas now I think it's become the expectation for everybody. If you play basketball, you better be getting up hundreds of shots every day and lifting weights starting in sixth grade and or younger. And is that a danger or is that a positive? What's your opinion on that?
I think there's definitely the dangers of the burnout. You know, for example, I just use my own case. You know, I have a 13-year-old, you know, teenage boy. Like for me, you know, the biggest importance, like for him, is to get sleep. You know, so I want to throw this out for all the parents out there. You know, when you're feeling anxious because you feel like your son's falling behind because, you know, he's not getting up at 6 a.m. to work out. You know, I do think there are the rare types, you know, the Peyton Pritchards of the world, who's going to get up at 6 a.m. and go to the garage and dribble the ball until, you know, his hands are bleeding. I think there's danger in that because I don't think people understand who Peyton is. You know, I've had a chance to see him at USA Basketball when he was, you know, 16 years old and on. You know, I had the distinct privilege of having him drop his career high in high school against my team of all teams, you know, on my floor, you know, when he dropped 45 points, you know, in the second round of league play. And so I think we tend to, you know, idolize and put on pedestal the exceptional, you know, players like Peyton or the Steph Currys, right? They're not the Giannis Antetokounmpos. They're not the freak bodies, you know, that the NBA treasures today. They're just like if you saw them down the street at a mall or you know at a Safeway, like they're the same person, right? So it makes it especially you think you can attain that, but they are a rare breed, and I think you know keeping some perspective on that. So for example, I look at my son and I don't see that he has that natural drive to get up in the morning. Then I'm not fighting that. Hey, like you know I think they're. As I said to you earlier, like I don't want this my words to get twisted where like, hey coach, you just said like 10 minutes ago that you regret not giving some of your football back, you know, baseball, the other sport athletes this basketball experience that made them think that they want to go into basketball more. I'm not saying that at all. Like I know for my son, like that's his main priority, right? So knowing that, it gives me a little bit of a bigger picture window of saying, hey, this could be a 5-year journey moving forward for my son, especially because he's young. Maybe it's even a prep school year, it's a gap year, if he wants to play basketball, right? So that gives me, you know, kind of a runway to say, like, all right, I'm not, you know, knocking on his door at 6 a.m. when he needs that sleep to grow and to be, you know, to actually go through his day at school, you know, in a good state of mind, just because he got the necessary rest he needed.
Yeah, I think work ethic is definitely something that's positive, but the hard part is when, like you said, what is the priority? What is the future? Not, I think I was looking at the numbers the other day. It's like 9 or 11% of high school players are going to play college basketball at any level, and that's
That
not a
seems
high
high to me.
percent.
Yeah, nine
Yeah,
to 11 sounds high to me.
they might
You
even be
know, I would,
closer to seven or
yeah.
eight. But there's definitely positives to work ethic. But at the same time, again, not all of these players are going to go and play in college, and I mean, even at the youth level, not all of those players are going to go play varsity basketball. So there's
Exactly.
some danger into putting so many eggs in that basket when, like you said, maybe that's not the priority of the child, or maybe that's a little beyond what the expectations should be. But work ethic is positive, I think. So there's a fine balance there. And I think, like you said, between coaches and parents, it's something that we're all going to have to be aware of. And my son's 4, so he's got a ways before he's really into that game. But at that point, who knows? Like, maybe it's like fifth graders, you all better be doing like this intense summer training program if you ever want to be good. And that's an expectation I don't know if I want to place on him at that age.
Yeah. And ultimately, I think it's really the peers and the mentors that you're going to place your son around. And I don't know how many of your listeners are going to be parents, but, you know, I think back, I had a really impactful conversation with a personal mentor of mine, a gentleman by the name of Todd Chapman. He was the former ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to Brazil recently. You know, so really accomplished, but, you know, really smart man. And he, when I was living in Mozambique, this is my second or third year living in the country back in 2008, 2009. He had a son who he brought as part of his assignment to being the acting ambassador to Mozambique. So a 16, 17 year old coming from the States, living in this, you know, third world country, at the American school in a bubble. And Todd said to me something that was really impactful. I think about this for my own son I'm getting older in age, as we referenced, that, you know, I've done as good of a work as I can for my son up to this point, being a role model and making spending time with them a priority. But as you get older, you know, I'm even noticing it now, like if I say something, it might come across as corny, you know, or it might, you know, I might get the eye roll. And what Todd said to me was he recognized that as his son was getting into his, you know, teens, that his influence was going to minimize, and that he strategically sought out young men who could be role models for him. And so Todd was very persistent in pursuing me and begging me to start a basketball program at this American school. I didn't want to do it at all, Matt. I was so busy, like, working with, you know, high-level players in Mozambique. I said, I don't want to do it. And Todd was just so persistent. He eventually convinced me to do it. And all these years later, he said to me, this is just in the conversation last year. He said, you know, Marshall, I was very intentional about doing that because I knew that you had the same set of values and character that I hold. And I wanted you to be the messenger and not me. You know, and so I think about that conversation a lot as, you know, I'm coaching my son this year in eighth grade, but I, you know, I have no desires to coach him in high school. I want him to have his own experience. But what I'm going to do is make sure that the coaches that I surround him with, the young adults who are younger than me, cooler than me, you know, listen to the same music that my son listens to, I want them to have an impact important to my son. And I, you know, I'll always be present as a father, but I, you know, some of that heavy lifting I need to be sharing with others because they'll be around, you know, my son more. And by what is it, like transitive property, or by, you know, relation to that is really like, who are the 4 or 5 of his closest friends that he's spending the most time with? You know, how are they impacting my son's everyday life, you know? So I think that's the biggest thing that I'm focusing on. And again, I keep bringing it back to what you said earlier about the most impactful players. They came in chunks of 2 or 3. That success doesn't happen in a vacuum. That the most impactful kids were, it was really like 2 or 3 of them who were gym rats. So what you said earlier, you said, you know, the anomaly is that one kid. And I'm going to say this. This is another one I find myself as a high school coach saying this to a lot. I've said this a lot over the last 8 months to kids who are coming to me for private training, you know, from different high school programs. And I keep telling them, this is great that you're getting this work in, right? But if you're doing this alone and you don't go back to your high school program and you're not able to influence and impact 2 or 3 other guys to get in the gym with you, your success in your own high school program is going to be limited. So, you know, for example, my fourth year, we get to the state, you know, semifinals. we lose a heartbreaker to Jesuit. We eventually, you know, come back and win third place in state. And I had two players who were exceptional in the junior class: Casey Graver, who ended up being all state; Salmon Berry, who went on to continue to play basketball at the D3 level. He's down at University of Redlands now. And those two guys, the next day or the next week coming out of those championships, they got in the weight room together. And they were able to pull along like five or six other guys. It wasn't the entire program. It wasn't the underclassmen. But they had a group that dedicated themselves and said, we're not going to experience this again. And even though we lost Josh Engel to graduation, who was, you know, all state, we lost Wayne McKinney, who is currently a Division I player at University of San Diego. He moved down to San Diego for his junior year. We started off the season weak, but we ended up winning the TRL, our Three Rivers League, 12-0. And we were positioned to, in my opinion, win the state championship that year, even though we were the seventh seed. You know, we were set to play in the quarterfinals against a team down your neck of the woods in South Salem. But, you know, before COVID happened and, you know, canceled all our games. But I think about that, and I think if it's just one other guy who is going to get in the gym with you and impact you, then, you know, the others will follow. And so I think about that for my own son, that I would love for him to have two or three other guys he's on the journey with.
Well, I know you directed that statement at parents, but I think anybody, you know, particularly youth right now, can hear that and just hear the theme of community, the community around you. Who are your role models? And when you have role models, you know, maybe you like a certain basketball player because they can do this or that on the court. But when it comes to role models, you got to think character. Do they amplify the character that I want to live and have? And when you think about the peers you have, you got to think about, are they going to pull me along with them? And if I'm pulling them with me, are they going to follow as well? You got to have people that are going to motivate you and that you can motivate as well. So that theme of community, Coach, when you made that response, is just what comes to mind. And like you said, you can't do things alone, whether it's in basketball or life. You got to have people around you that are going to help you as well.
Yep.
Coach, we're running out of time because I don't have the premium Zoom, as I've said before in previous episodes. But I want to leave you with one more question here.
Okay.
Just to kind of prompt something. 8 years at Laco, if you had to build a starting five with opponents, people that played against you in the high school games, who would you pick? I'm going to pick your point guard, Peyton Pritchard. It's got to be Peyton Pritchard, a point guard.
Okay.
I'm assuming so.
Yeah, no question.
Okay.
I mean, but Peyton's a lion, man. And lion, yeah. Most. I did not even realize that as I was saying that out loud, you know, that's the Westland mascot. But he really was. He was the top dog in my 8 years. You know, his senior year, that was the best team that I've seen.
Finish the starting five here of opponents you had to face.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm putting Peyton at one, I would put Jackson Shellstead at two. But I think they can play off of each other, as you've seen, even for Peyton coming off the bench for the Celtics, he can play the two spots. So I think those two guys playing the backcourt is pretty hard to beat. This is just, again, off my personal experience, and it's a hard one, but you know, for 2 years straight, we lost to a Lincoln team that was, you know, pretty tough. And Bryce Sloan, who went on to play Division II basketball down in California, probably the last player that you know, he's one of those players that you want on your team and you hate to play against. He was just a gangbuster. You know, he rallied. He just refused to lose. So somebody like that, who's a little chippy, a little ornery. So now you got him and Peyton, who, you know, are pretty tough that way. Jackson's more, you know, sit back and, you know, he can observe it. And then in the blink of an eye, you know, drop 15 points on you in like 3 minutes. So we're going to go small ball lineup there. And then, boy, who else would I, you're really putting me on the spot here. You know, there's so many other guards in our state that I can think of, but if I'm going to round it out with a couple of, you know, post players, I would probably go Ben Gregg, even though technically I didn't coach against him. We did. He ended up, you know, enrolling early to Gonzaga, but, you know, during my era, he's probably one of the best, you know, bigs to be produced. So, you know, put Ben Gregg at the 4 to 5, and then I would round it out with just another local guy, just to shout him out. We'll put Stevie Schlabaugh from Tiger at the 4 spot. He's gone on to have a really productive career at Bushnell. And, I just always had a really good impression of him. I thought he handled himself with class. Oftentimes just a focal point of that Tiger defense or the Tiger offense. And, I think in my years, I would always double team him, somebody that, just you respect, right? So, there's very few guys that make it to our scouting report, at least for us in 8 years. Like, say, hey, like you got it. Like, if you made it onto our scouting report and say you have to stop this guy and you win the game, like that's pretty rare. So, Steven Schlaubach definitely makes that list. So, a lot of shooting. We probably played some five out, a lot of pick and pop. And then, all the guys who can run the lane, and Ben could get loose for a couple of rim run dunks and such. So, I would put that team up against anybody,
Solid
even
squad right
today.
there. You mentioned Jackson Schellstad, and my friend Malik, who I just had on the show, mentioned that he's somebody that he recommends to young players to watch right now. Do you have somebody in mind you would say, you know what, you're a middle school kid, you need to watch this player, whether they're high school, college, or pro, or whether their time is over and they're retired? Is there somebody you recommend they study up and watch on?
Yeah, I mean Jackson, I think Jackson again, Jackson and Peyton are really hard because they're such unicorns. And obviously the two of them get paired a lot just because, they came from the same community and they're both playing at played at Oregon, playing at Oregon. I think there's elements of Jackson's game that you should definitely steal, if you're a guard. Like he always has his head up, I think about another, if I'm to shout out a local player, there's a Jaden Nelson, from South Salem, Skinny, we call him, right? And you've seen him plenty of times. Somebody who went, got a full ride scholarship to a Division I program at Portland State, decided to go down a level, down a level, whatever that means, to St. Martin's at D2, who, by the way, led by Coach Aaron Landon and Tyler Velasquez is this assistant coach. They're number two in the country right now, by the way. So it's pretty high level basketball. But what I would recommend, for both, young players watching is for Jackson and for Skinny, having coached against them, they always made the right play. If they drew two, the ball was coming out of their hands. Oftentimes I see a lot of really talented youth players, you get double teamed, they want to hold on to the ball. They don't have that trust in teammates, just make the right play, a pocket pass out of double team. Throw, dribble into space, and if you're a little guard, dribble out away from pressure into space so you can make an overhead pass, to somebody who's open to give another teammate a chance to play downhill and play, the advantage in numbers. So, you may not have the shooting game or you may not have the dribbling game of a Jackson or Skinny, but you definitely should have the mindset that if you are a player who can command a double team, what are you doing from there to get the ball out of your hands to give your teammates an advantage? Which eventually, if you have good teammates, the ball ends up back on you anyways, and you get the open shot. It just means that you have to trust your teammates. Everybody touches the ball. You get the ball back in 4 or 5 seconds, and you're still shooting the shot that you could have been shooting over a double team.
That's good stuff right there. I mean, I think back to somebody I played against a lot when I was coming up, Jeremiah Dominguez. You might remember from Portland State. I don't know if you were back around when he was in high school, but he was the same way. If he was getting double teamed, he was going to make the pass, and he still got his points, but he also got a lot of assists because he was willing to pass the ball, and it made him harder to guard. Coach, I want to bring you back on after your season, after you've had a whole year of the youth tournament experience, and just pick your brain about what you see and where we can improve the youth game, what kids can do to get better that you've seen, and that type of stuff. That sound good?
No, that sounds great, brother. Always an honor to spend time with you. Thanks for all you're doing for the kids down there in the Salem area. And hopefully I'll find you out on the court soon here.
Yep. Give me a few years, man.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Coach.